vacation. I hope everyone had a good break and at least some sleep to last through these last 3 weeks. I'm Lindsay Acker, and I'm here as president of Peace Fellowship this morning with a few announcements about events coming up, and then to kind of get us started this morning. First event, if you want to hear more from Tiffany Fitzhenry after you hear this talk this morning, she's speaking again tonight at 7 p.m. in Martin Chapel in a talk entitled Patriotic or Propagandized. Also tonight at 7, there's a women's basketball game. Tomorrow at 6, there's a Queer Voices Coffee House where allies will read anonymous stories about how discrimination has affected members of the queer community. It's a time for queer voices to be heard without danger and for allies to show our support. For more information or to read one of those stories, talk to Emily Powell. Friday at 7, there's a chamber singers concert. Saturday at 1, some honor seniors will be presenting their capstone projects in Common Grounds. Sunday at 2:30 is the final gathering of Inquirer for this semester, which is the time to like ask questions about faith and just talk it over with friends in a safe space. And next Tuesday at 7, there's an orchestra concert. I'd also like to draw attention to Destiny's Daughters, which is a new women's mentoring group on campus, and they focus on finding strengths and self, purpose, and building a relationship with Christ. I didn't list everything. As you can see, there's a lot more. I was actually technically only supposed to list 5. Sorry, Brian. So make sure you check out the events calendar and check your emails from Tyler for all of the hub information for the weekend. Convocation this morning is focusing on EMU core values of social justice, community, and peace building. And as you can tell, it's being filmed. So I know we like to keep the first 3 rows open because we're all afraid of seeing too well, but if you could all, or some of you, move forward and fill these rows, our reactions are going to be part of this documentary, and it's going to be a really cool experience. So that's why you might have caught us asking people to move to the center. And also, if some of you want to move to the front, that would be great. And just do it while I'm talking. So, thanks, Isaac. If anyone wants to come fill that beautiful hole that was just vacated, feel free to do so. You know, you guys are good. You came to the front, thank you. You listened well. Thanks. Okay. After beginning her college career majoring in film at the University of Miami, Tiffany finished her motion picture studies with a focus on screenwriting at the New York Film Academy's intensive program in New York City. Driven to learn the business behind the art, she took an internship opportunity in Los Angeles, working for Hollywood power producers Arnold and Ann Copelson, where she quickly gained a sharp insight into what nuances separated a successful pitch or script from all the rest. In 2012, Tiffany penned her first 1-hour drama TV special, which garnered attention from Hollywood's top heavyweight producers and became an instant contender to become a new series at ABC. Though offers came in to write for some of the most successful TV producers and shows, Tiffany remained committed to her and her husband's plan to raise their 2 school-age daughters in the slower-paced, close-knit community outside Atlanta, where they had chosen to relocate in 2009. In addition to screenwriting, Tiffany is the author of best-selling young adult trilogy, The Oldest Soul. She and her husband Don have formed Hierarchy Publishing, with the intention to publish on their own and ultimately be in control of the delivery of her art directly to its audience. Today, Tiffany will speak to us about how the American movie community can be one of the most influential mechanisms for propaganda. The Department of Defense not only gives funding towards movie creation, but demands a certain level of control over script writing, narrative, and imaging. She will share complex ideas about what we can do in the future to remove the military-industrial complex from our entertainment. Welcome, Tiffany. And before we hear from Tiffany, we have a musical treat. Professor David Berry and instructor Hannah Schultz will be playing a few pieces from student composer Luke Mullett.
While Luke's getting ready to give a comment, this is the hole that needs to be filled now. That comes from our cinematographer.
Please.
This hole right here.
If everybody just moved the row forward,
it'd be perfect. Oh my God. I don't see anyone moving. Come on.
Come on.
3 more. This one.
right. So I'm Luke Mullett, and what is going to be played here is a selection from a collection of piano preludes for four-hand piano, titled 12 Preludes for a Dream. They're basically all supposed to kind of follow the path of going to bed, dreaming, and eventually waking up. But you won't get the full experience because it's just a selection of them. If you want to hear them all, come on December 6th at 12:10 p.m. here at the General Recital. Yeah, I hope you enjoy them.
Thank you.
beautiful.
I really appreciate how it ties in with everything that we're about to talk about. So, thank you for that. How many times have you seen this? How many times have you seen this familiar establishing shot of Langley? If you think about it, you've seen it a lot in different TV shows and movies. But what if I told you that filmmakers can only get this aerial shot of Langley via the CIA? That they can only use it with the CIA's permission once the CIA has reviewed the entire script and made any and all changes that they want. In order to use this shot, filmmakers must tell the stories the CIA wants in precisely the way the CIA wants these stories to be told. In other words, every single time you see this, you are unknowingly watching CIA propaganda. Good morning. It's so great to be back here at EMU. Today, I want to talk about living the dream, a Hollywood illusion. Today, I want to talk about the power of storytelling. More than any other human expression, storytelling is what shapes the world. Plato famously said, "Those who tell the stories rule society." The Navajo said, "Those who tell the stories rule the world." Funny thing is, I don't know any actual storytellers who want to rule the world. You'd be hard-pressed to find a true artist who does. It's just not how we're built. Those who want power, though, those in power, and those who want to stay in power, they know this fact very well. Those who want to profit off and control populations know it too. I just love storytelling. It's why I'm on this planet. To have a love of storytelling is to have a love of people, humans. To find them, their experiences, their trials and tribulations, so beautiful, so important, so endlessly fascinating. You know that if the story of every person's life could somehow be told, not a single human on Earth would feel alone. This is what great, divinely inspired storytelling has the power to do, to connect us to one another and to our humanity, to open our minds and hearts. Great stories have a lot in common. A brilliant man named Joseph Campbell realized this, and he mapped it out in something called The Hero's Journey, which goes roughly like this. Someone concludes, for some reason, things just can't keep going the way they've been going. The opportunity presents itself to leave their ordinary world behind and embark on a quest in search of a remedy. If they answer the call to adventure, which, after some reluctance, they always do, and which, very often in screenplays, is an actual phone call, they leave the safety and their imperfect, ordinary world behind, and enter a new world, a special world, a place where the truth is revealed to them and their perspective is expanded. Here, they endure challenges, meet mentors, and acquire new skills along the way, everything they'll need for the battle ahead. Once all their illusions are shattered and their ego is sufficiently flattened, they enter the dark night of the soul, the innermost cave. They have to make a choice, knowing all they now know, understanding the stakes, with a full picture of what they're up against. They have to be willing to risk it all, to sacrifice everything, to throw themselves into the fire. How bad do they want to fix this problem? That's when they invariably realize it's bigger than just them. It always is, right? And so our hero emerges, prepared for the final epic showdown. It takes every new skill, and all the knowledge they've learned along the way in order to return with the elixir, after which they are transformed, and so is their world. And of course, they always get the girl. What's so special and so powerful about this is it's the way life works, isn't it? In real life, we are all the heroes of our own storied journeys, the epic odyssey of our earthly existence. Storytelling is art. On an unconscious, primal level, since we've been drawing on caves, humanity has instinctively understood that art is an unbroken connection to the infinite unknowable. In short, we're hardwired to know that art is God talking. Because of this, we unconsciously do what it tells us to do. We build what it tells us to build. We become who it tells us we are. So, what if I told you your storytelling was being shaped and molded, not by artists and their divine connections, but by unseen influences, all in order to shape and mold you, to achieve unstated, hidden agendas? Given what you've just learned, you can see how well that would work. The American expression, living the dream, begins to take on a whole new meaning. A dream that could easily be an illusion, something wrongly perceived by your senses. You think your stories are one thing, but they're actually another. Are we living in a well-crafted illusion? What purpose would that serve? And what role does Hollywood have in creating it? Between media, movies, TV shows, Netflix, video games, out of the 24 hours in a day, Americans now spend over 11 of them consuming content, according to the latest Nielsen data. And let's be brutally honest, we could probably double that number, as we very often consume content from multiple screens at once. Now consider that we spend roughly 7 out of those 24 hours sleeping, and well, yeah, let's just say it doesn't leave a whole lot of time for reading Emerson by a babbling brook or wandering through a meadow contemplating the space-time continuum. In fact, in the history of humanity, nothing's ever come close to simultaneously occupying our collective attention for 11 hours a day, 4,015 hours per year. So, you do that for 20 years, you've just spent 3,345 days doing nothing other than consuming content, or 9 out of those 20 years. The only thing other than content we spend more time consuming is air. But we actually think about what's in the air we breathe, right? There's even an index. We understand how important what's in it is to our health. We think about what's in the food we consume. The ingredients are listed by law. We understand what's in it and how important that is to our health. What about our content, though? Our stories? What's in them? Where are they coming from? Who's deciding which stories we're being told and how? And what effect is this having on us, on our society, on our world? Well, to understand, let's get back to basics for a second. Content, a state of peaceful happiness, to satisfy content. Content. Well, that's just a silly play on words, right? Surely it's a meaningless coincidence. We aren't being kept content through content, right? Kept pacified, agreeable, mindless. Words are funny things, aren't they? Speaking of words, did you ever wonder what the word Hollywood means? Hollywood being the world's main manufacturer of our stories. The etymology of the word Hollywood comes from the ancient Druids, who used the wood of the holly tree to make magic wands. The holly tree was their most sacred symbol because they believed holly wood had the ability to cast spells. So Hollywood, by the very meaning of the word, is all about casting spells. So, just to recap, we consume content for the majority of our waking hours. It benefits powerful people to shape and mold our stories for their own purposes, and the very word Hollywood quite literally means casting spells. It's not looking good, guys, but as the heroes of our own journey, we must forge ahead. If we want to emerge transformed, we've got to reach the innermost cave. If storytelling has really been hijacked by powerful people to create a collective illusion on a mass scale, what might be the effects of such a thing? Let's have a look. America. It's many things to many people, but from a global perspective, there is one thing that America is more than anything else: war. This is a map of who people think is the biggest threat to world peace by country. This map surprises a lot of Americans. We are deeply ingrained to believe that everything we do militarily is justified, worth doing, and always for the greater good. That's what we're told, over and over and over again. This is a chart that shows, depending on the year of your birth, how much of your life we've been at war. It's easy to see the trend, increasing continuously, kind of like our content consumption. If you were born after 2001, we have been at war for your entire lifetime. Now, as Americans, the ones who are giving our money and our lives, what could possibly cause us to go along with an increasingly perpetual state of war? Wars that most Americans can't even explain why we're fighting. We'd almost have to be brainwashed. Have you ever stopped to wonder why you don't see movies or TV shows focused on the subject of, say, military suicide? Despite that 22 veterans a day take their own lives. Have you ever wondered why you never see big Hollywood movies that examine the Iraq War in a critical way? It's certainly not for lack of tragic stories to tell or important questions that deserve to be asked. So why is that? Hopefully most of us are already aware that just 6 corporations own the news media. Soon to be even less if Fox and Disney get their way. We've seen the powerful ill effects that paradigm of centralized control and corporate ownership has had on investigative journalism and the free flow of information. But did you know that these handful of corporations who own the media own Hollywood as well? What do they want with our movies and TV shows? What do they want with storytelling? Who are these powerful corporations? And who are they connected to? During his farewell address from the White House, Eisenhower famously warned about what he dubbed the military-industrial complex. As far back as 1961, Eisenhower saw a burgeoning alliance between the arms industry, politicians, and the military. An alliance between the people making the bombs and those making the decisions about dropping them. Now, the question is there a link between the people creating our movies and TV shows and this known, covert, well-documented, unholy alliance? Yes. Yes, there is. 1,000 times yes. Aside from the over 4,000 government documents which prove it, the Sony hack demonstrated how Hollywood is tied to the US government and the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower warned about the woes of the arms industry being in bed with politicians, but the Sony archives reveal much more than that. We now have movie studios with deep ties to Washington and the military-industrial complex. In response to the publishing of the hacked emails, Sony quickly put out a carefully worded statement saying they vehemently disagree with the assertion that the material belongs in the public domain. Sony by no means denied the fact that the company works directly with the US government and has deep ties to the military-industrial complex, but rather said they don't think the American public needs to know about it. Here is an email between the U.S. State Department Undersecretary and Michael Linton, the CEO of Sony Pictures. The Undersecretary is asking the CEO of Sony Pictures for film executives he can see in New York regarding anti-Russian and anti-ISIL messaging. In another exchange, the two discuss names of people in Hollywood who the U.S. State Department is suggesting for involvement in this project of shaping public perception on foreign affairs. Some of the names the government suggested include Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, George Clooney, screenwriters Aaron Sorkin and Shonda Rhimes, and Steven Spielberg. One of the things about all this I find most fascinating didn't even come from the Sony hack, it came from Wikipedia, the career biography of Sony Pictures CEO, Michael Linton, which I, of course, looked at immediately after reading these emails. He began his career in British intelligence, spent time on Wall Street, then, from there, without any entertainment experience whatsoever, he became the president of Disney Hollywood Pictures, then president and CEO of Sony. He sits on the board of trustees of the RAND Corporation, a Washington think tank for the military-industrial complex, and he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, what many argue is the most highly influential private group who, outside the purview of the American people or any oversight by Congress at all, play a major role in shaping U.S. foreign policy. In addition to the Sony email hack, lawsuits filed under the Freedom of Information Act have recently unearthed over 4,000 documents which confirm in shocking detail the existence of what is now being called the MIMENET, the Military Industrial Media Entertainment Network. It took over 5 years of constant lawsuits to uncover the information we now have. Information about the government's involvement with movie scripts, which had to be repeatedly requested as the documents continued to come back fully redacted, again and again and again. Why is this so top secret? Why would the government fight so hard to keep this information from the public? Because to anyone who understands what they're looking at, they reveal the MIMENET. The full picture of these documents reveal, for the first time, the systematic weaponization by the powerful of storytelling against the population. Yes, my dear heroes, in case you're wondering, we've just entered the innermost cave. Here's what we now know. Unofficially, Hollywood has been quietly working with the government since the very first motion picture, Birth of a Nation, in 1910. The Pentagon opened an office in Hollywood in the 1940s. Today, the government maintains a multitude of different offices throughout Hollywood that do nothing but liaison between filmmakers and nearly every branch of the government, military, and intelligence. The FBI started working in Hollywood in the 1930s and has done so consistently ever since. Though the CIA were messing with Hollywood pretty much since their inception in 1947, they didn't officially open an office for this express purpose until 1997. It's hard to say what prompted the world's most clandestine organization to make such a bold move. It is interesting to note, however, that a congressman by the name of Daniel Patrick Moynihan sponsored a bill in 1995 to disband the CIA. It was at the height of this public relations problem, and many believe in response to it, that the CIA began working feverishly with Hollywood, an alliance you knew nothing about, but one that has undoubtedly shaped your entire perception of the CIA. The very first production to come out of this new pact between Hollywood and the CIA was a film called The Recruit, which coincidentally made the case for the value and existence of the CIA. Oh, did you think you were just watching an Al Pacino movie? No, you're actually being told about our country's existential need for the CIA by the CIA, all under the guise of a fictional, big-budget Hollywood action movie. Other heavily redacted, super-secret CIA Hollywood productions include SALT, Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, Mission Impossible, Patriot Games, Enemy of the State, The Bourne Series, The Sum of All Fears, Charlie Wilson's War, Meet the Parents, The Good Shepherd, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, and the Dwayne Johnson children's movie, Race to Witch Mountain, to name just a few. We now know that in addition to the CIA and FBI, other branches of government, military, and intelligence have also been involved in the production of major Hollywood films. They include the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, DHS, Customs and Border Patrol, ICE, FEMA, the DEA, NASA, the CDC, the NSA, the State Department, the Department of Energy, and the Secret Service. Thanks to Eisenhower, we already understand that our government is operating on behalf of outside powerful interests. So, what does this government involvement with Hollywood look like? How does it work? How much control does the government have over shaping the projects it's involved with? The answer is total. Films that seek the assistance of the government submit the entire script to the Office of Film Liaisons, who stipulate, and I quote, "Do not send us just military scenes or military dialogue. You must send the entire script so we can decide whether or not we want to give assistance to the project. If their project is approved for assistance, the filmmakers then sign a contract called a production assistance agreement, locking them into the government's approved version of the script, including any and all changes. From pre-production through post-production, the documents have revealed direct and total oversight of not only the script in a line-by-line fashion, but even things like casting and editing, right up to the final cut. Following a production's approval, a government advisor is assigned to ensure the cooperation and loyalty of the filmmakers to the Pentagon's directives. Why would filmmakers do this? Well, the challenges inherent in making movies are endless and enormous, and the government, knowing this, makes it very attractive for filmmakers and studios alike to seek their assistance by way of offering substantial financial and technical help, unlimited use of military kit and hardware, access, locations, and diplomacy, all otherwise unavailable. Even, and very often, real US soldiers who spend an amount of time on Hollywood movie sets that would no doubt surprise US taxpayers. Documents show director Ridley Scott made numerous script changes to Black Hawk Down to please the Pentagon. But in all fairness, according to Scott, the Pentagon went out of its way to help the film get shot and released at all costs, including working with the government of Morocco, where the film was made, to allow actual US forces, along with major military equipment, despite that we did not have a status of forces agreement with that country. Let that sink in. Then show me one movie studio that could accomplish that for a filmmaker. Now, why do you suppose the Pentagon will go to such lengths to tell their version of the story of what happened about what happened in Somalia in 1993 at the Battle of Mogadishu, which was, by all accounts, one of the worst examples of a failed mission in US military history? Perhaps when you understand that Black Hawk Down was released in 2002 during the lead-up to the Iraq invasion, it all starts to make a bit more sense. This is just one of thousands of examples of the kind of bolstering filmmakers receive for telling the right story in the right way at the right time. Films like Black Hawk Down, much like the Pentagon production, Top Gun, are designed to reboot the American psyche for the next intervention. These films are the storytelling equivalent of military recruitment commercials, airing to the widest possible audience in high definition with Dolby Digital Surround Sound. Recruitment commercials that look like big budget, glossy Hollywood action movies. The original script had Ben Stiller's character finding CIA torture manuals on the desk. The CIA, which surprisingly was involved in the making of this movie, changed this to pictures of De Niro with various dignitaries. The CIA doesn't want you thinking about things like their use of torture. How about the DOD's script notes on Pitch Perfect 3? Yes. It's perfect. Some of those changes, which were enormous, include the removal of the military characters from a scene that was set in a casino, the removal of a confrontation between a military character and Amy's conman father. The Pentagon also made sure that Aubrey's line about her father, which read, "He practically killed Osama bin Laden," was only said in jest before that they would allow it into the film. What about Man of Steel? The Pentagon said, "We recognize and appreciate the many changes that have already been made, but we also need to resolve all the concerns below before going ahead and granting access to equipment and locations." How about Hulk? Here, in an email to the filmmakers, the government liaison says, "He's apprehensive in sending the notes because the changes the filmmakers are being required to make are, quote, radical. In fact, there was a complete overhaul of the entire plot and characters of this Marvel movie by your government." Like Hulk, every single movie in the Marvel Universe has been made in this same strict authoritarian alliance with the Pentagon. Illusion, something wrongly perceived by the senses, deceptive in appearance. You think it's one thing, but it's actually another. 11 hours a day, endless war. The whole dream illusion thing doesn't seem so far-fetched now, does it? I've shown you just a few examples of the thousands of movie and TV titles that we now know the government, in conjunction with and on behalf of other outside interests, have shaped and influenced. This relationship is so staggering and extensive that, along with the rest of the media complex, it's not only the largest example of propaganda in the history of civilization, but its use of art to control our thinking and perceptions is tantamount to crimes against humanity. Using art as propaganda is the most deceptive way to misdirect us. It is also the most effective. We're hardwired to understand that art is God talking. Not only do we believe that the creation of art is a service to humanity, but we unconsciously manifest whatever art shows us. The illusion is that our art is being used in service of something else without our knowledge. But the solution is simple: awareness, awakening from the dream. You see, in order to use storytelling or news or anything else to manipulate us, we have to be convinced that these things are not being used to manipulate us. We have to be under the spell, under the illusion that movies are just movies. News is just news. There aren't covert corporate interests behind the creation of it all. The moment you see it, the illusion shatters. The second you wake up, it all suddenly and completely ceases to work. It's like turning off a faucet. Storytelling is art. Art is God talking. My mission is simple and straightforward. Save storytelling, save the world. Sure, that sounds a little dramatic, but hey, I am a screenwriter. I can't help seeing everything in life through the lens of a great story. And now that you understand the stakes, I'm sure you agree. Thank you.
So I'd like you to go to Mentimeter, menti.com, and there are three questions there. You'll see the code here in a minute. Having heard and seen this presentation, what new thoughts or questions do you have in mind? And Tiffany will just take a look at those, might reply or respond to a few, but we will take those into the talk back time over lunch in the East Dining Room. That's next for the two hours. You can be there for one of those times. Or also this evening, some of these questions could be addressed in this evening's presentation in Martin Chapel. That one is Tiffany speaking on the difference between being patriotic and propagandized. So again, we're going to start to see some of those questions or responses coming up on the screen. Thoughtful, honest responses are most appreciated and on topic. Just take a look at what's coming up, Tiffany.
Oh, okay. Is there a place for questions? Where I was, okay. Right. Sorry. What movies haven't been affected? No. I'll go back to that one.
And we only have a few minutes.
The CIA can change every single thing about the plot that they want to. That's what the production agreement stipulates. They can change everything, anything.
What news media is trustworthy or not bought out by the military?
It's so hard. I think there, you know, if people aren't corporate, if it's an independent, I read a lot of independent journalists out of Australia. They seem to be sane. And of course you feel like you're getting information. Which now we're just really just being told what to feel about what's happening. We're not really being told what's happening. We're being told how to feel about what's happening. Oh, there's so many. Okay. Who was whistleblowing? Nobody's whistleblowing about this.
We call yourself a whistleblower.
But me.
Yeah.
Because nobody who knows about this will tell you. Because I don't do this for the benefit of my own career. I do this because I love humanity, and I love storytelling, and it's bigger than me. It's my own hero's journey, so we'll see where it leads.
Did the likely scene you showed need approval?
Yes.
Where did you look at the fuss?
Oh, so there's a website called spyculture.com. So I didn't mention it here, but the two gentlemen who are responsible for the 4,000 documents, of course WikiLeaks is responsible for the Sony hack, right? But the two gentlemen who are responsible for the FOIA documents are two guys out of the UK. They're not even Americans. And their names are Tom Secker and Matt Alford, and they're heroes and patriots. Because we all knew, as a screenwriter, you know, I would get documents from my agent telling me what to write about. Like, if I want to sell a script, write about this, and it's agendas, you know, and it comes down from these sort of corporate overlords. It's the innermost cave, guys. This is the dark night of the soul, and you know, it's not what art is intended to be. So art's not being able to be made because there's making propaganda.
But then maybe the final question: do producers ever refuse to abide by government?
Oh, sure.
Could you give tell us about a project that's pure?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So here's the thing. movies that you don't even think would do this, Fast and Furious, things that have nothing to do with like the military. So you can't assume that just because it's a military movie, Fast and Furious had Pentagon, is a Pentagon movie. But for example, Platoon. You guys are probably too young to remember Platoon. But Platoon was rejected for military assistance.
Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm. Because it was critical of the Vietnam War. You can't criticize particularly. You can't even really talk about Vietnam. You will get rejected. But you certainly can't talk about it honestly. And that movie ended up being made. They had, if you go back and watch that movie, there's like two helicopters, and they just keep flying them back and forth. They obviously had no money, no budget. But that movie won an Academy Award for Best Picture, and veterans just flocked to see it and just bawled their eyes out and said that the story of their war had finally been told. So, I mean, that's what storytelling has the power to do, real storytelling. But, you know, that's the story that the filmmakers wanted to tell, the artists, and they ended up having to tell it themselves. And that was the same year Top Gun was made. And Top Gun, you know, was Top Gun. They had recruiters at movie theaters signing people up for the Air Force during when Top Gun. I don't remember that, but that's what I've read. Yeah. Okay, more.
Yeah. So do come to the talk back in the East Dining Room, 11:15 to 12:15. If you're a student and you need a meal ticket, we have you covered. 12:15 to 1:15 is the second round. But then tonight at Martin Chapel at 7, we're really continuing this conversation. It'll be a smaller group, but we really want you to come and bring some friends who care. And thank you, Tiffany.